3560.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cannabis Q&A. We got Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the line. How are you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Hanging in there. Sorry if the Skype went awry.
Oh, yeah. No problem with that. I've got a weird thing going on with the Spreaker studio to connect to Cannabis Radio today. Maybe we just have gremlins today.
Okay. Well, glad to catch you.
Yeah, we've got this recorded. We'll get it up on Cannabis Radio, and it'll be just fine. But Dr. Mitch joins us to talk about the latest stories in cannabis science and research. Also, if you've got a question, you can call in live at 971-533-7111. The phone line is open, and we'll take any of your questions. But we've got a few questions here for Dr. Mitch. And the big story today, I've seen this all over the cannabis news, is that high-potency marijuana could cause brain damage and psychosis. So, you know, we're terrified here, Dr. Mitch. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, I'm confused at how this has turned into a game of telephone. Basically, there was a 2% difference in this really specific micro measurement in the corpus callosum, which is an area of the brain that is basically connecting the two hemispheres. It's insane to me that they looked there kind of in the first place. This is usually a place that's damaged by cocaine and usually only moderately. I had thought, you know, if I had these brain scans, I would have looked at the hippocampus or something to do with memory, something that, you know, we usually think of as a stereotype for cannabis effects. Suddenly, this is like taken on a life of its own. And so they're saying, oh, my God, the right hemisphere can't talk to the left hemisphere. There are no actual behavioral things reported at all. The samples are relatively small. I feel like the participants may have been cocaine users and they just didn't fess up somehow, and that in a sense it only seems to be showing up for those who use skunk, which is supposedly stronger, although it's kind of self-reported as well. So I mean, I'm happy to see somebody try to replicate some kind of corpus callosum changes in you know, high potency cannabis users, but this is preliminary at best, and it suddenly turned into this marijuana causes brain damage headline. Really disappointing.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. You know, thinking about other corpus callosum sort of stuff, am I recalling correctly that there was some study showing a difference in the corpus callosum between gay men and straight men, or was I?
No, that was another brain structure, but we do see a lot of corpus callosum problems in children of alcoholics, and I'm thinking that may also be something. In fact, You just see strange things with, you know, making the right hand do something and then trying to get the left hand to mimic it, and they're not so good. So, again, we're talking really subtle, minor things, not something that would actually have an impact on anything going on in daily life. No, that sexual orientation stuff was actually a different part of the brain.
Okay. Let's take a look at the state of Arizona. There was a state representative who published an op-ed entitled "Marijuana is the Enemy of Education." And within it, he cited all these studies that show that marijuana users are going to do worse on IQ tests and they're going to have less ability to do X, Y, or Z. And I was just wondering if in general you could tell us about what studies have shown as far as marijuana's effect on cognition and learning and memory and so forth.
So he unfortunately confuses acute effects and chronic effects. So, yeah, right after people smoke cannabis, there are some modest changes in encoding new information. But he, at least the way this is worded, makes it sound like those are permanent or something. And I'm sure if he believes that, he must be completely, you know, freaking out about it all, but it's just not true. Then he summarizes some of the arguments for legalization as if people are saying that cannabis is 114 times safer than alcohol, which I have no idea where that number must have come from. It's the zaniest thing I've seen. And then somehow one study that suggested that cannabis using teens are more likely to drop out of high school, he seems to ignore the fact that other data suggests that actually before they used cannabis, they had lower grades and were less sort of engaged in school anyway. So I'm afraid he's going to be disappointed in that, getting rid of marijuana isn't going to actually have this wonderful impact on education he had hoped for. So I understand, if he thought these things were true, why he would be so riled up about it. But unfortunately, these things aren't true.
Yeah, it makes it more difficult to support that kind of opinion when you're basing it on fallacies. Absolutely. Let's hope some of that information gets through to them there in Arizona. Now, moving to the Pacific Northwest and the West Coast, there's a story in the Washington Post about illegal pot farming operations poisoning threatened weasels. We're killing the weasels with our illegal weed. Can you elaborate?
This one does really sadden me because, I love little animals, and I want them to have a nice environment. But I think the confusion here, of course, is this is a product of the drug war, not the product of cannabis per se. It looks like folks who are setting up illegal pot farms are also putting a lot of rat poison around those farms to basically keep the rats away from their plants, which I understand. I mean, you go to all this trouble to plant everything. But then, unfortunately, the weasels, it's ending up in their running water and things like that. But the solution here is not to bust a bunch of people for marijuana possession. The solution is to arrange for legal grows.
Yeah, I don't think the warehouse grows in Denver are hurting any weasels.
Exactly. None of the ones I saw had any weasels anywhere near.
Now, as far as how much energy they're using compared to an outdoor grow, that's a whole other discussion. But let's get to this discussion from a new study that shows public opinion is the biggest reason governments legalize pot. I was kind of surprised by this one because I thought, we stake a lot of the let's legalize marijuana on the tax part, raising tax revenue. But this study says that, what do you know, they're actually listening to the people.
I was slightly heartwarmed by this, so to speak. I thought, wow, it's taken years, but finally, state reps are willing to vote with what their own constituencies want, which is a curious thing. And in fact, maybe some of the folks who have been persuaded it has been that tax and regulate, we'll make enough money to make it worth it argument. The legislators cited that 95.5% of the reason was to say that this is what my people want. Well, by all means, that's great. I wish they had sort of paid attention 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it may take them a little while to hear it, but they finally heard. So that's good news.
Exactly.
Another study now coming out, this is out of Canada, on cannabis and driving. And according to this, they're using a state-of-the-art sort of simulator. And I'm just wondering what you know about this study, and can a simulator ever really be good enough?
What's interesting is some work back in the 70s suggested that the simulators are a reasonable facsimile, and that if you can get people to take them seriously, they do actually map onto some of the driving that they've done in those tracks with the other cars. And the one advantage of these data are just that they're actually going to have some of the unexpected events and, sort of the equivalent of having a rabbit run out in front of you and surprises and things like that. So I think these data will be intriguing as far as providing an estimate of what does cannabis do to drivers in general. I am a little disappointed that they're not focusing more on, say, developing some kind of roadside sobriety thing while they're doing this. It wouldn't take that much time to have folks go ahead and walk a straight line or follow your finger or something like that in the midst of all this stuff. And in fact, what I'm guessing they're going to get is an incredible variation that co-varies with experience. So I'm afraid we're going to say, oh, guess what? Cannabis does impair driving in the ways we knew before. It's not hard on making turns or things like that. And that people compensate well, like we've seen in some of the data from Amsterdam, where people are less likely to try to pass other cars. They're good about keeping more space between their car and the car in front of them. They start stopping way before the stop sign and stuff like that. That's not even really going to be news. But I think anything else they find, we're going to sort of wonder, like, well, why don't you also find what are the indicators of who is impaired and who isn't, so we could actually feel like we've got a roadside sobriety test we could trust.
You know, and the angle I'm wondering about is, you know, if you put me on a simulator, somewhere in my subconscious at all times, I know it's a simulator and I know I'm fine. And maybe I drive a little more recklessly than I would in a real world situation where I know, even though it's a test track, this is real and I could actually physically suffer harm here. And then also, how much does the impact of modern video games affect this? I mean, there's a whole generation of kids now and even older adults, millennials, who have mastered these race car games. Does that affect this in any way?
So what's intriguing is it can have both effects. If they've got intoxicated practice, basically if they've been playing driving games while they're high, they're probably going to really flourish on these.
Yeah.
The problem is most of those driving games are about kind of driving recklessly and stuff like that. So it's also this classically conditioned time to drive like a maniac.
Yeah.
So it really is going to be hard to generalize. And taking those data from the 70s and saying what was a good analog then applies now may be a bit of a leap.
Yeah, I just remember that video from KIRO in Seattle that had, I call her All Day Addie, the Addie Norton, the medical marijuana patient, driving their pot test. And she's, you know, she's at 56 nanograms in her system. And she's on camera saying, you should never drive this high, but if you get the chance, you should do it. Just do it. She's laughing and having a great old time. So I don't know. We'll have to see how that maps out. Hey, folks, we're just about out of time here with Dr. Mitch. But remember, you can always get a question answered privately, if you like, by email. The email address is 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And who knows, your question might become a study someday, the basis for such. And Dr. Mitch, good luck on all the research and studies that you've got ongoing. I'm sure there's plenty of them.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right. And check out Dr. Mitch's podcast, Burning Issues. You can catch it on cannabisradio.com as well. A 30-minute in-depth look at the latest burning issues in cannabis law reform, science, and research. All right. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the Radical Rant with a deeper look at the Sean Parker Adult Use of Marijuana Act, the initiative to legalize marijuana in California in 2016. I'm Radical Russ from Rolla J Studios in beautiful, legal Potland, Oregon.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.